Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
A very good Saturday morning to you. It is the Saturday morning just after 8 o'clock here on 1150 KKNW, the flagship station of Drive Time Radio with yours truly, New York Vinny. How you doing out there? Hope everything is going good for you this Saturday morning. You're going to get out of the house, enjoy some of the nice weather that we've been having. Maybe this morning head on over to Cars and Coffee in Shoreline. I'm sure they would love to see you over there. If whether you have a car that you like to cruise around in, or you just show up with your car and look at some of the other cars. It's a great bunch of people there. Tell them I sent you, and you'll get a special discount on admission. It's free to go in anyway, so, I mean, you know, but this is the show that's known for giving away stuff that you can get for free anyway. All right. It's been a crazy week in the automotive world, as many things have popped up to our attention. The price of gasoline keeps going through the roof. I mean, it goes up 20 cents between the time you stick the nozzle in and the time you finish filling up. Gas goes up 20 cents a gallon. And listen, if you're not mad at the oil companies after this, I hate to say this, but I mean, it just, the shaft in us, and you can blame it on whoever you want to blame it on. But I believe that with the pandemic and everything that's gone on, that we'd be seeing what we'd be seeing no matter who was president. Unless you subscribe to the theory that this is a conspiracy and, you know, it's to, you know, put Trump back in office. I don't know. I don't delve that far into conspiracy theories. I'm still trying to figure out the Kennedy assassination. But I do know that something's not right when oil companies, their profits can be so much and the average person can be hurt so badly. And it just doesn't stop. I don't know what the president can do. I don't know what you can do. But I do know that if you want to buy a gas-guzzling car, there are plenty of them for sale now. All those people went out and bought those big Tahoes and extremely big people movers, you know, with 10 seats in it and everything. They get about 9 miles to the gallon. Whoa, they are not happy right now because it's, the second biggest thing on Facebook this week, I believe, besides the eclipse, the lunar eclipse that happened, pictures of that, was people showing how it cost them $150 to fill up their tanks. And if you have a car that uses premium, it's even worse. I mean, or diesel. If you're driving a diesel car, Maroon, $6.50 a gallon. I've seen it in some places. It's crazy. I mean, I think we're at a point where people are going to start to leave their cars and take public transportation. And I'm driving less. I know you're driving less. And something along the way has to shake loose because it can't continue like this. The economy is not going to take it. People obviously need their cars to go to work, to go here, to go there. But I think you're going to start to see things like carpooling and stuff like that come back into style, or taking transit to go downtown because, a trip downtown and back, now costs you $10, $15 in your car for, 2 gallons worth of gas. And I think, I don't know what the breaking point is, but I think we're getting close to it. I think we're getting very close to the point where we really start to look at this and start to make a movement towards smaller cars. Just when the the American manufacturers decided, well, you know, we don't want to build small cars anymore. You know, America's hungry for pickup trucks and big trucks. And, you know, so that's what we're building now. You know, all of a sudden, those smaller pickup trucks and smaller cars you watch are going to be in high demand. I mean, I got a Toyota Celica, 2000 Toyota Celica. I mean, that thing gets like 28 miles to the gallon. Even better on the highway. I mean, that's a dream car. You know, it runs good, and it fulfills a need of sportiness and the ability to not use a ton of gas and make it a little bit easier on my wallet. But now last week I drove the big Lexus, and man, that thing, you know, got 8-9 miles to the gallon. If you're towing something, it's even worse. So I don't know how all these people are going to go on all these trips this year and, you know, take their motorhomes and everything, because those things don't get a lot of you know good gas mileage. So I would think that, you know, you're going to have a conundrum. Last year you went out, you bought this motorhome so you could be alone and go somewhere far away from people. Now you might not be able to afford the gas to get far away from people. Now, the good thing is, remember how everybody was screaming about gas shortages? Gas shortages, you couldn't get gas to the gas stations. There weren't enough drivers, wasn't enough this, wasn't enough that. You don't see that, do you? Funny how at $5.50 a gallon or $6 a gallon, they can get all the gas you want. Funny how that all works, isn't it? Yeah. All right, what else do we have? We got a couple of really good guests coming up this morning as well. Kirby Arnold is going to join us from Indianapolis. Things are getting hot there as the Indianapolis 500 is getting ready to get run. Next week. And it's an interesting time there, because there have been some changes, some rule changes and this and that. So it's we'll talk to Kirby about what's going on at Indianapolis. And Joni Purcell is going to join us. Remember last year we were talking to Jeff Ehud, who was driving around the country, putting up miles, and taking pledges for a drive toward a cure, which is a charity that helps fund Parkinson's disease research. And this year, Joni Purcell is fulfilling that same function. She's out on the road for Drive Toward a Cure. And what's interesting is she is doing it on a Harley Davidson. So it'll be fun to talk to her. She's a, I don't know if you want to call Idaho local, but she's from the Northwest. And so we'll spend a couple of minutes talking to her about being out on the road. We'll give you a place where you can get more information about her and everything like that. So we'll get you, we'll get you all caught up with that. Couple of big things that happened this week. Number one, you have this Mercedes-Benz 300 SLR. You hear this story? Mercedes took one of these super rare, there's only two of them in the world, they were prototypes, and sold one so that they could create a fund to do charitable work, which I'm all for. And they sold this Mercedes-Benz, the 300 SLR, for a record. It's a 300 SLR Uhlenhaut Coupe. A private collector bought it. Mercedes will use the money for a global charitable fund. $143 million. Boy, you talk about sticker shock when you go into the showroom. This guy paid $143 million for a Mercedes-Benz. These coupes were built by Rudolf Uhlenhaut. They have sat in the classic collection at the Mercedes-Benz Museum for over half a century. And it Sotheby's did the auctioning, and it's just a spectacularly beautiful car. You can see a picture of it there. That's the front of it, and it's just a spectacular vehicle. I don't know where they're going to display it, if they have a private collection. Nobody knows who bought it, except that he's a well-known figure from Britain's automotive industry and a long-standing collector of specialist cars, according to Mercedes. The previous record was $70 million that was paid in 2018 by the guy who owns WeatherTech. You know, the floor mats that you see advertised on TV, the floor mats and the cup holder cell thing, David McNeil. $70 million for a 63 Ferrari 250 Gran Turismo Olomogato. Gran Turismo Olomogato. That's GTO. That's right. Ferrari actually made GTOs before Pontiac did. And so a new record, and that is an incredible price for an incredible, great reason. And it's a wonderful looking car. I wish the owner a lot of success. Don't forget to make sure that you have that thing, the insurance on that thing, paid. There is another story that I wanted to jump into quickly here, because it is, I think it's something that we all need to pay attention to. Traffic fatalities. In a report by the NHTSA this week, traffic fatalities have gone up this past year. The early estimate says that 42,915 people died in motor vehicle crashes last year, up 10.5% from 2020. Highest number since 2005. It's amazing to me. I mean, you think with all the safety stuff we're doing in cars, with everything that we are doing to make the roads safer, the cars safer, that this number would be going down. But unfortunately, it's going the other way. And I don't know exactly what is going to happen, if the infrastructure bill is going to do anything. I don't know that it's the infrastructure so much as it is people that you see just driving absolutely stupidly on the road. I mean, you can put fix all the bridges and all the highways and all the dead man's curbs that you want, but if you don't do something about people that drive like a fool, or that are on their telephones, or that don't know how to drive, you really need to look at what you're doing and figure out a way to fix it, because the slaughter on the roads is ridiculous. We drive cars that are safer than ever, yet we're killing more people than ever in cars. All right, get a chance now to switch gears. We go from death and destruction to Indianapolis, where we pray that there'll be no death and destruction for the Indy 500 that's coming up. Our good friend Kirby Arnold is going to join us here as we bring him in on Zoom. Kirby, good morning. How are you?
Looks like he's still joining into the meeting. We can just get a couple more seconds.
Okay, there he is.
Now we got him.
Hi, Kirby.
Hey there. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing? Man, you look like you're in a recording studio.
You know, they got these really cool little booths in the back of the media center here, and just for stuff like that, you know, podcasts and or if you just need a quiet place to go throw a tantrum.
You know, a little quiet room. I'm sure that sometimes some of the owners and some of the drivers could use. Do they have any of those downstairs in the pit area?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that.
How are you, pal?
I'm good. Yeah, good, real good. Good. Yeah, good, you look good.
You're in Disneyland, huh?
That's what I call it. Yeah. It's my happiest place on earth.
It's so much fun. There's one race that anybody, I mean, people pay attention to NASCAR people, but even the non-racing fans get drawn into Indianapolis because it's such a tradition. It's such an American thing, I think, still. And it's funny because, I mean, obviously auto racing is all around the world and there's all these different circuits, but there's something about the Indianapolis 500 that draws even the, it's like the Kentucky Derby. You may not go to a horse race all year, but you pay attention right. to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah. You're aware of it. Like you say, it's an iconic event. It's the one thing that when you mention it, most people know what it is basically. So yeah. And, okay, but, and you can feel the importance of it when you're around here too.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of money, a lot of, you know, in the old days, I guess it used to be, they would show, you know, you'd show up with your car and get in there somehow and get it safety checked. And you know, there was some great underdog stories written. That's not the case anymore at Indy, is it?
Not quite. I mean, it's a spec series. So all the cars are the same. The engines are pretty well the same. There's two engine manufacturers, Honda and Chevrolet. So it's very regulated as a spec series. And I was talking to one of the team managers the other day. He basically said, you know, it's kind of to protect us from ourselves. Cause years ago you could see where this was headed with the money and the expenses and the top teams were doing so much development and yeah, the money was just going out of this world. Not like it's inexpensive. You still got, it's still millions and millions and millions of dollars to field a team, but the playing field is so much more level now. There are those underdog stories. One of them is Stefan Wilson this year, whose deal just came together a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, when I was here Monday morning, they were piecing that car together because it was a car that had run on Saturday here in the road race with the AJ Foyt team. And so the team that Steph is driving for, you know, acquired that car. They did a quick turnaround. And when you're changing it from road course to oval configuration, it's quite a big change. A lot of things, a lot of parts and pieces change on that car. So, you know, they were thrashing to get it ready in order to get him on track when practice started on Tuesday.
Now, I was just reading this morning that bump day, the words bump day has virtually disappeared from Indianapolis this year because they have not a shortage of cars, but for the first time in a long time, you know more than I do.
Yeah, there have been some years – Not that far in the distant past that they have only had 33 cars. This year, they kind of had to scrape that last car, that last team together to get the 33rd entry. So, you know, it's a lot of what is happening in the world and even in auto racing. There's supply issues, there's personnel issues, and a lot of these teams can only be spread so far. So, yeah, there's no bumping, which is unfortunate because the past few years when they have had bumping, it's been some just tremendous drama going right up to the 11th hour, the 59th minute of the 11th hour of qualifying to see who was going to get in and who wasn't. Because remember a few years ago when Fernando Alonso did not make the race. So that's right. The kind of drama that is Indy is about. Not going to happen this year, although I talked to a lot of the drivers and people with some of the teams this past week, and qualifying is still really important because you still want to start fairly far up in the race if you feel like you've got a chance to win the race.
Right, right. You want to get into that first row of or second row of cars if you possibly can. Right?
Exactly. Like Sage Karam's a young driver. The last 3 years he started 31st, so he started on the inside of the 11th row, 11th and last row. Last year he drove all the way up to 7th, and I was talking to him about it because the old – a lot of people are saying you can win this race from anywhere. And he was saying, well, not really. In his case, he said everything in the race last year went perfect for him. And 7th was the best that they could do. They just couldn't have done any better than that. So starting, you know, even 25th or so would be better. Just a little bit. Yeah. Just not as many cars to have to leapfrog to get back up to the front.
talking to my good friend Kirby Arnold, who is at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, bearing witness to everything that's going on leading up to the Indianapolis 500. All right, who's the long shot, Kirby? Who are the guys, a few teams that nobody knows about that we should run out to DraftKings and bet on?
Oh, golly, yeah. don't go anything that I say.
Yeah,
but,
I
tell you, you want some long shots who have been running well. I think Sage Karam is one. It's Dreyer and Reinbold Racing. They only enter the Indy 500 every year. Sage Karam and Santino Ferrucci are their two drivers. They've both been pretty darn fast this week. So if there is a real underdog that could run up front, those guys could do it. I mean, like I said, Sage went from 31st to 7th last year in the race. So if they can qualify further up in the field, they might have a chance to be there. But still, it's so hard to beat the big teams. I mean, last year, Castroneves won it, and he wasn't on everybody's radar last year because he's driving for the Meyer Shank Racing team, which is not the Penske's, it's not the Ganassi's, it's not the Andretti's, but those guys have gotten their act together and they're really strong. So you can, but as of last year, nobody was considering them in that realm with those other big giant teams. But when you got Elio Castroneves driving, there's a world of talent and a world of experience around here, and that's what paid off to help him win that race last year. So having said that, I still think the big teams are probably the ones to keep an eye on. My sleeper, I wouldn't say it's a sleeper pick, but my pick this year is Will Power of Team Penske. Penske had a rough year last year at Indianapolis, and they've gotten their stuff together. They've been kind of quiet this whole week in practice, really haven't been up on the leaderboard. They've been fast, but the thing I've noticed about Will Power, he's a pretty emotional guy, and he's the points leader for one thing. He hasn't won a race, but he's finished in the top five in all five races so far. He's got a quiet confidence about him this year that I think, you know, may pay off. And I talked to Rick Mears the other day about him, and he thinks, yeah, the guy, you know, he's a veteran at this thing, but he's still got a lot to win.
You had a pretty long conversation. Matter of fact, I have an article that you put up on Facebook this morning with the guy who runs the Ganassi team, Chip Ganassi.
Right. Mike Hall is the general manager of that program. Yeah.
Yeah. Ganassi, of course, out of Pittsburgh. I know him a bit. And great owner. I mean, if you want to drive for somebody, he's probably the guy you want to drive for. If you want to run a team, he's probably the guy you want to run it for. What did he have to say about the state of things that are going on in Indy racing right now?
It's kind of it is what it is type of thing. I mean, we talked about spec racing versus, you know, the era before when you could almost bring and develop anything you want. And it was kind of a proving ground here. And that was interesting. But like he said, you know, back then guys were winning races by two laps, and there were maybe 10 or 11 out of 33 cars that were finishing the race. Whereas now you got 25 cars on the lead lap, and the margin of victory is often less than a second. So the competition level is better than it's ever been.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it really is. I mean, I remember watching the old days, the black and white days, the AJ Foyt days when, you know, mm-hmm. you were looking around and it was, you know, it seemed to be a real, people were, you know, we're ahead and slip back and ahead, slip back. Now it almost seems like it's one pack that runs
whole
race. And I don't want to call it boring because it's certainly not boring when cars are whizzing by at 210, 212 miles an hour. But is there a thought to changing up the way it is a little bit, or is this what they're going to do and they're going to stick with it?
I think this is what it is. I think they've got a pretty good formula and they're not going to get away from it in the near future. Now in 2 years, they're introducing a new engine that'll be a 2.4 liter twin turbocharged, produce about 900 horsepower. But the thing about this is there'll be a hybrid element to that engine, which adds 100 horsepower to it. So I still think there will be pack racing. And when I say pack racing, it's not like three wide like we see at the Daytona 500 in the stock cars, but guys running nose to tail around a place here like Indianapolis, a lot of passing. Whereas, you know, before, you know, 20, 30 years ago, like I said, guys had a 15-second lead on each other,
yeah,
let's say. So it is pretty exciting to see these guys come out of turn four all together, you know, nose to tail coming down the straightaway. And they're doing over 240 miles an hour down the straightaway now. It's pretty phenomenal to see. But I don't see a lot changing. One of the things Mike Hall and I talked about for a story I'm working on here, should run this next week, is just about the far distant future of IndyCar racing and the Indy 500. We know where the automotive industry is headed toward electrification and everything. Do we see that? Where do we see that going at this level of motorsport? And there's some people who just cannot stand the thought of a car silently going by, even if it's going by at 245 miles an hour, because the sound of an Indy car is what makes IndyCar racing so attractive. But like Mike Hall said, and others I've talked to said, you know, we're in a different era, and the sounds have changed through the different eras. We've always had the internal combustion engines, but we've got a new generation of people who are going to grow up with a different attitude toward what equates speed. You know, we always equated speed when you come here with volume, the noise,
right?
Noise equals speed. But, you know, people who have a Tesla can put you in the front seat and take off, and it's silent, and there's speed there because it'll throw you right in the back of the seat. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in 20, 30, 40, 50 years after we're all long gone, to see, curious to see what would happen to this sport for sure.
Well, you know, it's interesting when I drove the electric Mustang, let's say. I mean, I got in that car and hit the accelerator, and I mean, it was like, whoa, mm-hmm. You know, it did it, pin you back in your seat. You were saying, man, I would love to take this out to the drag strip and run against, you know, some kind of big block, you know, 396 or a 427 Chevy and see what it would do, because it felt like it would beat the pants off it. You know,
right.
These right. cars have incredible 0 to 60 times, 0 to 100 times. But it's the strange phenomenon. Now, some cars actually pump sound into the cabin. So,
I've heard about that. I'm not so sure about that.
I mean, I'm wondering if they just record these cars down and they'll have some guy sit there. He'll be like the Wizard of Oz. You know, he's hitting the levers for the speed going by.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the one thing about, J.R. Hildebrand is a veteran driver here, and I talked to him quite a bit. And I talked for this story, I talked to him about electrification in the series and where it could be going. What he would really love to see is a little bit more open rule book, so somebody can develop an electric car, come here and compete against the internal combustion engine cars and see how they stand. I mean, that's what Indy was pretty much based on when it started here. So, don't know that'll ever happen, but it's a good thought.
I mean, I haven't looked. I just entered my mind. Has there ever been an electric car back in the early days of Indies that ever ran?
No. Kind of the closest thing I can think of was in the mid to late 60s, the turbine cars that Andy Granatelli brought here. It was a Pratt and Whitney jet engine, basically, and that's what Parnelli Jones ran in 1967 here. They called it the Whooshmobile because it would go by and it just had that light jet engine sound to it.
Yeah.
That little high pitched whine of a jet engine. Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually, of course, I went around here in 67 to hear it for myself, but there've been some vintage cars that occasionally will run laps around the place. And a few years ago, I heard they did have one of those turbines here, and to hear it does sound strange, and I could see how jarring it could be to the traditionalists around here. That was outlawed because I think those things were just so much more powerful and
Well, just such an advantage of the hydro people when they see, you know, when a piston engine starts up, you know, there's still a couple of guys that run a piston engine and they start up and everybody's smiling because they hear the piston engine going. But yeah,
nothing like the sound of that Allison engine in an old hydro, is there?
Oh man, yeah, that's we got to record that, man. If that ever disappears, we're all going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
All right. Well. When is the race is next?
Sunday the 29th is the race. We got qualifying going on as we speak. They started about 30 minutes ago. Trying to look at my telemetry to see Renus VK of Ed Carpenter Racing right now has the fastest qualifying speed. Jimmy Johnson is fourth so far, so he just ran. And Romain Grosjean, the former Formula One driver, ranks fifth so far. So we got a long day of qualifying if they can beat the rain.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Yeah, that's right. You got rain coming too on top of it. Can we catch up with you next week before the race?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Kirby, it's good to see you, man. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Always good to talk to you and see you, Vinny.
All right. Talk to you soon, Kirby. Take care of yourself.
Bye.
It's Kirby Arnold out in Indianapolis, keeping an eye on things for us as, you know, Indianapolis is coming up. And it's always good to, you know, always good to check in. It really is America's race when you think about it. It really is that, you know, the idea that like the Kentucky Derby, everybody stops kind of what they're doing and pays attention. To the Indianapolis 500. If you don't pay attention to any race, you pay attention to that one. All right, let's switch gears. We go from now cars and racing to cruising on a Harley Davidson. What do you think about that? Well, as we spoke about last year many times to our friend Jeff Ehuden, who did this great drive last year around the country in his Tacoma pickup truck. This year, our friends at Drive Tour de Cure, one of the people that are going on she's the only one for Drive for a Cure that's going on a 34-day ride to support Parkinson's disease research. And we have her with us right now. Joni Purcell is out of Idaho. And she is on a beautiful yellow Harley Davidson, I believe, and cruising around the country. Joni, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Vinny. I'm great.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice. How's life on the road these days?
Well, right now we are in Brattleboro, Vermont, and we left Albany, New York this morning. The roads were less than desirable, probably the worst roads we've been on the entire trip, with signs, motorcycles be cautious, because they really had the roads torn up. But it's still very beautiful. And the ride's been amazing, really fun.
Good. And, the roads, you know, especially this time of year, as you drive around the country, everybody's trying to get their construction work in and everything after winter, and it gets a little nuts. How are you, now, did you started in Idaho, you've gone across country so far, right?
Right. So we started May 9th in Boise, Idaho. I do have a buddy that I've known since 2002. And I was going to be coming by myself. He overheard me and said, well, Joni, I'll ride with you. And I was shocked, amazed, and excited about that. So he's also with me on this ride. And we left Boise in snow and cold and went to Salt Lake City the first night in Utah. And since then, we've actually had maybe the worst we've had to deal with is the wind. The weather has been pretty nice. We haven't had any more rain, no more snow. So we're kind of happy about that.
Great. And how do people kind of recognize you on the road and see what you're doing and honk at you and stuff like that?
You know, I think why they honk is it's like it's a girl on a big bike. And we went to New York and Buffalo, and people literally were pulling up beside me and just cranking their head because we were the only motorcycles on the road, thinking probably we were a bit crazy, which we probably were, but it's kind of fun. It causes people to want to have a conversation, and people have actually downloaded the QR code to make donations. We've met friends that we wouldn't have met had we not been doing it this way. I'm sorry, there's an ambulance coming.
Oh, that's okay. We like the street sound. You know, it's good for the realism. What made you get involved with Drive Toward a Cure, Joni?
Hold on just a second. I'm so sorry.
Okay, no, it's okay.
Now I can hear you.
Okay. Well, what made you get involved with Drive Toward a Cure?
Well, I'm a financial advisor, Blake Simmons, who's one of the owners for Simmons Fine Jewelry. He and his dad, Jay, have been clients a long time. I told him about my ride. He asked, is your ride sponsored? And I said, no. Did you want to sponsor it? And he said, I have some really great ideas. Let me get a hold of my friend, Deb Pollock, who is the founder for Drive Toward a Cure. She called, asked me about sponsoring the ride, meaning sponsoring Parkinson's. And right. I'm really happy that we're doing this. Blake's grandfather passed away from complications. Deb's mom passed away from complications. One of my best of friends has been diagnosed in 2018. And if we could find a cure, that would be wonderful. It doesn't kill people. Complications from it is what they end up dying from. And I think it's just one more thing that we could support and help a lot of people thrive and teach them, you know, patient care, how to take care of themselves and come up with a cure. Because I believe we have a lot of smart people doing research that can come up with that cure.
Yeah, we're really, it's such a great thing that Drive Toward a Cure does. I believe it. I have, a couple of close friends that have Parkinson's. An uncle had it and died from complications from it. And it's just such a wonderful thing that you're doing and that people can do. Now, people can get involved with you by going to your page on the Drive Toward a Cure website, which is drivetowardacure.org/fundraising/Joni, J-O-N-I. And they can keep track of your trip, and they can also contribute, by the mile for what you're doing. You're going to have some miles. You got 8,000 miles that you're planning to travel on this trip.
Yes. We are at 33 right now, I believe. It's possible we'll be doing over 8. So the bikes are definitely getting a run, but it's so much fun, and I'm really glad that the whole thing came together the way that it did. Sometimes the
How's
stars
the bike
align.
Holding up?
The bike, it's awesome. I'll probably just need new tires when I'm done, but it's purring like a kitty.
Good, good. And I'm sure that now you're going to go to Canada as well and stop in a couple of provinces. That ought to be interesting to go up there and hang out with some of our Canadian brethren.
Yes. We're going to go to Nova Scotia after Maine, and then we'll head towards Toronto. And then we want to drop down back into the U.S. at Sault Ste. Marie and go to Milwaukee and see the factory and meet some more of our peeps.
Neat. How, do you get tired riding all day? I mean, you've ridden a lot, so you know how to do it, but is it a tiring thing to ride that long every day, or do you get, is it pleasurable? Do you get a lot of, is it a lot of fun doing it?
Mostly it's fun. The most I've traveled in a day is 650 miles. Wind is absolutely the most exhausting because you don't know how to predict if there's going to be a crosswind. Right. I told everybody I lost during the windstorm that we were in Colorado. My bag lid came up and I lost my glasses. So they're roadkill somewhere. I don't know where, but the wind is, it's a tough one, but it's pleasure. It's therapy. It's the best therapist I've ever had. I've made lots of decisions on that bike that were life-changing. And this ride is life-changing. I mean, I wouldn't be talking to you, Vinny.
I know.
I wouldn't expect that your article and learned about you.
Well, I'm very excited that you're doing this. We will we'll check in with you from time to time and see how you're progressing. As I always tell my motorcycle friends out there, be safe out there. There's a lot of crazy people and a lot of crazy people that have cell phones. So
that's true.
Yeah, be careful. And we will check in with you again sometime in the near future.
Thank you so much, Vinny. You have a great day.
Joni, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for jumping on the show with us. And once again, if you want to get involved with contributing a little bit of money toward Drive Toward a Cure, you can go to Joni's fundraising page, which is at www.drivetowardacure.org/fundraising/Joni. That's Joni's picture. You can see right there on the screen. And we'll also put a link up on our Facebook page so that you can click on it and follow her progress along if you so desire. All right, it is Drive Time Radio. I'm New York Vinny. We are continuing on through a Saturday morning here as we usually do. Let's do our standard musical soiree, our Saturday morning cartoon brought to you because we love cars and music. They go together so well. So, Mr. DJ, why don't you spin that tune? There you go. Out of Cleveland, Ohio in the 70s, they had a string of big hits. And I believe the first Sniff and Scratch, or Scratch and Sniff, I should say, album cover. The band is the Raspberries. The song Driving Around, Eric Carmen, Wally Bryson, Jim Bafanti, Dave Smalley, the personnel on that record. And again, Eric Carmen, probably the biggest name to come out of that group with such great songs as Go All The Way. And of course, Eric Carmen with Never Gonna Fall In Love Again. Great band and great song there on our Saturday morning cartoon. I brought to you in hopes that you'll mix up some cars and music and take your mind off the world by listening to some music. You'll be amazed at how well it works. All right, let's check in with our good friend Nathan, the producer, who is back from his foray. Nathan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Ah, you picked up a little bit of a Boston accent.
I spent too much time in the ballpark.
You sound wicked bad, Pally.
Not enough time spent, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so, man. So your trip was good, and now you're back here, back to the mundane existence of producing Drive Time Radio.
Back in the chilly Seattle Pacific Northwest. Great to be back.
Well, I was. But you had a good trip. You like? What do you think of Fenway Park?
Oh man, it is just good old school baseball stadium vibe. I mean, you walk in, it's a totally different atmosphere from T-Mobile Park for those of our listeners in the Seattle area. You know, it's basically only two floors. It's really small park in comparison to your more modern baseball stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, it looks so big on television, but when you get it, you know, when you walk through the doors, I mean, if there's a line at the concession stand, you can't walk around them.
Oh, no. It's all on one concourse level.
Yeah, it's all in one place. And, you know, what I always found, too, is the seats. They're built for 1918 butts.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting in the grandstand section behind all the support beams, and my legroom was minus 3 inches.
I was crammed
into that little seat.
Yeah, you must have not fared well because, I actually went, I got out of the press box when I was there and last time I was there, I went out and I sat in the kind of a newer section where there were, you know, a little bit wider seats. But boy, I went and sat once right behind home plate. And I mean, I need a little Vaseline on both sides of my butt to get into that seat.
Well, I'll tell you, my immediate thought when I got into Fenway Park was looking at that green monster. I mean, how can you not look at it? It's basically what it's most known for. But no picture can do the green monster justice. On TV or professional photography, you walk into that stadium and it's just ginormous in front of you, and you really give a lot of respect to the players that are able to hit a home run over that wall.
Yeah, it's like the ivy at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go and you look at the when you see it on TV, it doesn't do it justice. But when you see it in full dimension and you see the ivy all over the place, you know, it's really kind of spectacular. It's one of those things that you're right. The TV, if you're not standing in the ballpark and looking at the grandeur of it, you're not really seeing it.
And then you go into the center field bleachers and just stand up right next to it. I mean, you're all that way up and you're still not even halfway up the wall. And you're looking at the players from right field. They just look like teeny tiny little ants in comparison to the height of it.
Yeah, really, it is it's definitely a treat to go there. I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you like Boston. It's no Seattle, but I like it. I think it's a really cool little town. And, it's got its problems like everywhere else. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I think it's a great little place to visit. We used to go up there a lot when I was, younger. We used to go up there because we used to go to New England all the time. And I always loved it. We always ran into really cool women in Boston. It was just always a lot of fun. They always, were fun. It took us around the town and showed us the bars and everything like that. It was very friendly. Guys always wanted to fight, but the women were very friendly.
All right. Well, what do you say we get moving on since we're short on time here? Do a quick question and road test.
Yes. Do you have a question for me?
If it'll play. There we go.
Yo, Vinny, what are you driving this week?
I thought you'd never asked.
That was a little bit cold. Had to shake off some rust.
Yeah, we haven't used it in a couple of weeks. I'm driving the, you'll love this, I'm driving a Mazda. I am in the Mazda 5, the CX-5, which for my money, if you're shopping for that midsize SUV, small SUV, there you see it. If you're not shopping this car, you're cheating yourself. Many publications, different car reviews think that this is the best small SUV out there. And I am totally in agreement with them. While it may be a tad underpowered in places, it makes up for it in driving dynamics. The way you get into this thing and it feels the road for you. You can put it on kind of a luxury setting and it gives you a little less road feel, a little more luxury feel. Or if you're feeling very sporty, you can jump in this thing and put it in sport and probably come as close to a high dollar Porsche handling type vehicle than you can find. Plus, on top of that, it's a IIHS 2021 top safety pick. There's a lot of great safety equipment in this thing. But for me, the interior of this vehicle is what makes it extremely special. It is a vehicle that really pleases you when you get in. The materials are nice. Mazda has upped their game inside of their vehicles. They have gone with higher grade interior materials, more space, more of an intuitive infotainment system. And when you put all of that together, you really get a great package with this car. has a great turbo. This particular one that cranks out 200 horsepower and change when you're using it in with premium fuel, but you can use regular fuel, take a little less horsepower, and you know, drive it around the city. And I really do think that this Mazda, it's not the most spacious vehicle inside for cargo, but it's close to the top. They did a redesign on this thing for this year and have put some lines into it and reconfigured the front end a little bit so that it's aerodynamically better. And it also is very pleasing to the eye. Electric tailgate in the back that you can stick your foot under it and it opens up. So there's lots of great things about this Mazda. But again, the biggest thing about this car is that it is fun to drive. They have put the sports car DNA that Mazda is known for into this vehicle that you can go and drive it and get your almost your choice of what you want in this car for a particular time that you want to drive it. There's certainly some upgrades that are going to come along as far as electric. I don't know if they will come to the CX-5 right away, but there's a talk among many people of electrification and hybridization of this vehicle, and I will be excited to see that happen when it does. But this week, that's what I'm driving this week. And again, this Mazda CX-5, I'm excited to take it up to our test track today and run it through its paces to see what it can really do. But, it's funny. I drove the 50 a couple of weeks ago, and I love that. And I love this one. All right. So that's our Yo Vinny, what are you driving this week? And we get a chance to do that every week. What we will do is we were going to do a road test this week, but we're a little short on time because we had guests. So we'll hold the road test off for next week. And also want to remind you that you can go to our Facebook page at any time and check out our fond farewells. And you can check out stuff that we do during the week. We always put pictures of what I'm driving this week up there, little things and stories that I find throughout the week. So please visit our Facebook page. Let us know you're out there. And let us know if there's a particular car that you want us to road test for you. We'll do our best to try to do that for you as well. All right, that's going to wrap it up for another edition of Drive Time Radio. Thank you so much to George Jackson, who helps this show along, to Keith Slater, who helps this show along, and especially to everybody, my sister, who helps this show along and does a great job of, making sure that you get Drive Time every week. So thank you to them. Thank you to you for listening, to Nathan for making the show move along as it does. And we will see you next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, if the Lord's willing and the creek don't rise. Have a good week.